my girl off the street. You're looking fine to me. You know you turn on the night, make me feel good, feel all right. Yeah. Turn on the night, make me feel good, feel all right. Well, turn on the night, make me feel good, feel all right.
Tune into Revolution Rock here on CJM 99.1 FM. In the Windsor, Detroit area, we're here with the New Enemies, and we've been talking with them for the last little bit, and we played some more new music from them that they just put out. We heard a song called Girl Off the Street, which was originally a Seatbelt song.
Yeah, Side B.
Side B. And that single came out 82?
In 82, yeah, we released it, yeah.
And you played, Rob, you played in the Seatbelts, so everyone's from Detroit, but you were from Windsor. Right?
Yeah.
How did you get involved in the Seatbelts?
Okay, well, I was working out at Cope's Lakeshore on the other side of Amherstburg with a band called Robert Michaels Band. It was a combination of the name of a couple guys in the band.
Mm-hmm.
But our singer, pianist, heavy alcoholic, and he used to build up a bar tab. So the owner started taking his tab out of our pay. And the more he drank, the less we got paid. So I was telling my wife about it, who was from Farmington, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, F them. Try and find some professionals in Detroit.
Yes, thank you for that.
So, yeah. So I was, you know, I was interested in the bookies scene and all that. Mm-hmm. This is around 79. And you know, so I wanted to find that type of a band, something that would fit in there. And I happened to come across an ad in the Detroit Free Press for a bass player. So I answered it, and that became the Crayon Killers.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, who were well-established Detroit musicians. So
very nice.
That's how it got started.
Yeah. And I saw the Crayon Killers in a bar called JP's on Riverside and Karen. Oh, yeah. I think it was 1980, and I fell in love with them. They were a great band.
Yeah. So they were before the Seatbelts?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The Seatbelts was a band at the same time the Crayon Killers was.
Okay.
We really liked the singer, and our guitar player had known the singer previously. So one time we all went out to see him, and we took him aside and suggested merging him with us.
Mm-hmm.
And we became the Seatbelts.
Nice.
By adding, we were already a unit, we just brought in Greg as a singer and became the Seatbelts.
Very cool. And because we were talking about that song, Girl Off the Street, you recorded that along with another selection of songs that you put up on Bandcamp just recently.
Yeah.
So maybe anyone that wants to talk about those recordings, like when did you do those recordings, and were you thinking, yeah, just talk about making those songs. How did you decide what to do, things like that?
Well, I mean, we had all this, you know, we were up to like four original songs, and it's like it's time to go to the studio, we think. And so rather than just do those four songs, we decided we'll include a couple of Robbie's old songs and a couple of Dry Heave songs. We'll do a reboot on those.
Mm-hmm.
And we had been talking to Scott Barlow, and Scott set us up with Empire Studios. And we laid down all the bass tracks in one night. And it went quite well, actually. And then anything that had to be redone, because, of course, you know, somebody's going to say, I don't like the way I played that. But when we moved over to Scott's studio, he's in a high-rise apartment.
Mm-hmm.
It's all digital. You can't really let your Fender twin reverb pass. So when I did some redos, it was going into the effects and straight into the recording. So, but it all worked out well, I think. I mean, Scott's a really knowledgeable engineer, and he knew how to he knew how to make us sound good.
Yeah, full credit to Scott. And I mean, Mark Calcott's got a gorgeous studio at Empire, and but the work that Scott did made that
the fine
really
tuning.
Good.
Yeah.
That was we actually recorded that almost exactly a year ago.
Wow.
And then I think we just sort of didn't finish it until, or Scott finished it around, was it March of this year?
Yeah, I think it was around March, yep.
Cool.
And we sort of just, you know, a couple times said, hey, we should start, you know, putting this out to, you know, try to get gigs and get people interested. And, it's been a pretty good reaction. And I mean, as demos go, it's a pretty polished demo, and that's mm-hmm. you know, full credit to Scott for that.
So, as you mentioned, some of the recordings, you have originals, and then you have some covers of previous acts. Some of the covers that you ended up doing were of Dry Heaves, and I just want to talk about that a little bit. We're going to play another one of these coming up, but Dry Heaves was a band that, not to get anecdotal, but I was exposed to probably when I was 17 or 18, someone who's just like, there's this weird Windsor band that no one's ever heard of, and they give me the CDR, and I'm listening to this, wondering who the heck these guys are, and I'm told eventually, oh, it's those guys are in that Irish band, Shannon Brothers, and I'm like, really? I guess I want to talk a little bit about the history of Dry Heaves, but I'm also wondering, like, how did you make that transition from this alt punk sound getting into folk music?
Okay, well, Dry Heaves themselves were born out of boredom with the current music scene. You know, we listened to the Detroit radio, and you know, you're listening to Journey and, you know, Bob Seger. I don't mind some Bob Seger,
really,
but
Bob,
you know,
Seger.
Everything was very formulated, and so we got together and said, why don't we form a band and go to the Battle of the Bands at Fireman's Field. They had a Battle of the Bands every Labor Day weekend. So we wrote a couple songs. Our bass player couldn't play bass, so he started playing bass on an old Arp Odyssey synthesizer.
Oh. I didn't know that.
And our drummer had never really drummed before, but he kind of came to the table and pulled it off. And after our first night at the Battle of the Bands, we were in second place. It's like, whoa, nobody expected this. So we made the final night, the final five bands, and we ended up coming in third place. And then, you know, different places around town were starting to ask us if we wanted to do gigs. So,
just as a quick aside, did you have the title Dry Heaves at that point? Or did that
yes.
come out? That's very yes. surprising. Wow.
Yeah, I was at work. And I told the guys at work, hey, I'm going to be in a band. We're going to call ourselves Dry Heaves. And this guy looks at me and says, what, are you going to be Tommy Vomit? And I said, yeah, I think so.
Sounds good, eh?
Yeah. That's amazing.
It rolls off the tongue.
I can't puke.
So I didn't even come up with the Tommy Vomit moniker, but I adopted it real quick after he told me. So.
Wow.
And then his brother was known as Heavy Kevy.
Heavy Kevy,
Heavy
yeah.
Kevy.
So obviously you were formed, and then you started playing a little bit. Like, I don't know too much about the actual history. So how long were Dry Heaves actually actively playing shows for?
Probably less than 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah. My brother ended up moving to Toronto. We tried doing long distance, and that doesn't work. So that pretty much put the kibosh, other than some reunion gigs here and there. I think we did our first reunion in 85. We did a couple in the 90s and a couple in the 2000s. But other than that, it was pretty much dead after that. And we had all these unfinished recordings that never got finished. Well, we did send them to this guy in Italy, and he released them on vinyl out of Italy.
And I think that's how I ended up getting that secondhand bootleg copy of your recordings. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I was going to ask about that. Like, I know you put out the original release, Shoot Yourself.
Yeah.
But then you had all these other recordings. So they just weren't done? Is that why you never...
They were just not done. Basically, I had a cassette of them that the guy said, here, take this, have a listen, and then come back with what you want to do with them. Mm-hmm. And probably less than a month later, the boards were up on the windows at the studio. They ran out of money. And the tape the original one-inch recording tape was lost for years, but about 3 or 4 years ago, my brother tracked it down somehow. And there's been no talk about going back in and doing anything with it, but it's kind of nice to have that. You can at least remix it yourself without even doing any more work. So
maybe even just do a remix and put that out online or something. Yeah. It would be interesting to hear. Now, when you were recording all those songs, did you do them all at the same time, or were they like spread out over different?
We did. I mean, first we did the three for the 45, yep. And then yeah, we pretty much laid down all the bass tracks all in one weekend out at, it was called Salem Studios. It was an old old schoolhouse out in Amherstburg area.
Okay.
And we basically set up in one room, so it was kind of like the Beatles recording, you know. It was a live recording kind of.
Okay.
Right.
So you played live.
And I'm just kind of wondering, you guys were making these bands roughly around the same time. Like, did you know each other back then? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we met up.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, we were big fans of each other, I think.
Yeah, and we did some gigs with the, with Crayon Killers at JP's.
Oh,
cool. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll take another break, play some music. And do you want to maybe play a Dry Heave song?
Yeah.
Let's see what we got.
That was the one, yeah.
I don't know if we can play that one.
Sure, we can try again.
Oh, we can play the new Enemies version, because that was re-recorded.
Yeah, we cleaned up those.
Yes, we did.
The offensive
lyrics. Is that in here?
It's right there. It's at the very bottom.
It's at the very bottom.
I love that this is on air, by the way.
Everyone's getting the commentary of me selecting this song.
And then also, we were talking about seatbelts a little bit. I think what will be really cool, let's do that, and then
we'll come back.
We actually have a 7-inch here. It's a seatbelt single. There is a side that you're not really going to be able to find anywhere else. I think maybe after that we'll play that. We can play International.
All right.
We'll get back to talk more about the music, the history of Windsor, and about what's coming up for New Enemies.
All right. Sounds good.
Cool. We'll be right back.
I guess I should speak. We're listening to Revolution Rock here on CJAM 99.1 FM. And we just came back there from some really hard to find music from the Seatbelts.
Yeah, that was international. Robbie, can you talk about that song a little bit? Any memories of being on that one?
Any memories of?
Of just being on that track?
Yeah, played on it. We did it at a studio, Cloudburst, I think it was called, in Detroit. Nice studio. I don't really know what to say about it. Dick Clark played it on American Bandstand. That was cool.
That's big.
Yeah. Doug Podell pushed it on W4. You know, I wasn't so much part of the Windsor scene as the Detroit scene, you know. I think we played it live on a show called Gary Cubberly's Sunday Morning on Channel 4, WWJ.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, some good things happened with it.
Great song. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I like it.
And you just mentioned there was a sample of an airplane taking off at the very beginning of it.
Yeah, from Metro. No, what's it called?
City Airport.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was self-recorded, that part?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
So there's some kids in it too. I don't know if you heard that part. It was Greg had our singer had three kids, so we did a little recording of them. And we threw their voices in, two in there.
Right on.
Very cool. And then before that, we heard another song from the New Enemies recordings that you just put out online. A version of a Dry Heaves "Shoot Yourself." So what did you want to get to next, Adam? Did you want to ask the?
I'm kind of interested because we're talking about the New Enemies, two New Enemies. Can we talk about enemies?
Sure. I think it was late summer of 1980 that my friend Dave Mackey came up to me and said, "Dougie, we got to start a band. Everyone's starting a band. Like, you know, like the punk scene, it's a sense of liberation that came from it, that, you know, anyone can start a band." And I said, "That's a great idea, Dave, except you and me don't have any musical skill whatsoever." And he goes, "No, man, I talked to Billy Drulard, and he'll play guitar, and I talked to Dave Shane, and he'll play drums. And so that leaves bass and singing. There's no way I'm going to sing, so you're the singer, and I'm the bass player." And it wasn't the first time that I wasn't able to avoid being talked into some stupid idea by Dave Mackey, but this one ended up having some usefulness to it. Our first, we practiced in a basement of a house that someone was living in and disturbed the neighbors for a while. Came up with 6 songs, 3 covers and 3 originals, and played in an amateur night. I think it was at the Drop-In, was it? And Dave Mackey's brother-in-law stopped somebody from throwing a bottle at the singer, i.e. me. Greg Langevin has passed away, but to this day, I want to thank Greg for saving my butt on that one. Within the crowd who was open to the idea of punk rock, it went over reasonably well, and we played a number of gigs around town. We kept going till the summer of 81. I think the last gig we played was when DOA played at the Core, and we backed them up, and that was, kind of a high point. And by that point, we had seen another guitarist around town who was really good, we really liked, really tasty style, a guy named Dave Whitehead, and so we asked him to join us because his band, I think he was in The Fix at that point, they were breaking up, and so for a while we were a 5-piece, and then just young guys couldn't get their act together, and we eventually broke up, and we had at the time talked about recording, but we never got around to recording anything other than a cassette of one of our practices in the basement of that house on Josephine.
Which we have.
Funnily enough,
we have with us here.
What a coincidence.
Maybe we'll play one of those tracks.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd like to hear it myself.
Okay.
Yeah, me too.
It takes the concept of lo-fi to its logical consequence.
Okay, well, lo-fi is no stranger to this show, as anyone that listens more than once can hear. But we love that stuff. And also, it's super rare, and it's a cool document of that time. So we're going to get to that. Do you want to get to that now, maybe? Or do you want to ask one more question?
Well, I think we did talk about Deja Voodoo earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And, just maybe a little bit of a memory here, because I guess... Tony recently passed, and we did talk about that earlier. They were a very important underground Canadian act. But I guess, Doug, you attended a show that they played at the university back in 85?
I can't be sure if it was 83, 84, or 85, but because I know I was in and out of Windsor, living in a couple of different places during that time, and they played at Saks Pub in the basement here at the University Center, so... a few yards from where we're sitting now.
Okay.
And I remember that one of their songs is "There's Someone in My House," and Gerard, he's got this big geeky guy with a suit on and these big square glasses, and he's looking like all scared, and he uses the Saks Pub had pillars that blocked your view of the stage from a certain angle. Gerard walked over the edge of the stage with your looking all scared, and it was like I already loved the band. I'd already seen them a few times, and it broke me up that one of my favorite bands was doing this and was making me like giggle at the same time as I was digging the show. But I had seen I saw them later when I lived in Ottawa, and then when I lived in Toronto, and they did these Deja Voodoo barbecue things where they promoted like-minded bands who were really cool and would go on to have some name themselves, bands like the Gruesomes, Jerry and the Sons of Rhythm Orchestra. Condition was a great Montreal band that hardly anybody's heard of, and they just decided they were going to do tours on their own, and they made it up as they went along, and they sort of created a pathway for other bands, and they were both really cool, nice people. And I bumped into Gerard a couple times over the decades. Still a very nice guy. He's a retired
linguistics
prof.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I think before he retired, his last step of his career, he was department head at Memorial University in St. John's. But very nice guy, and Tony was always a really nice guy too. And just made me very sad, and, you know, to hear of his passing, and, you know, personally, part of my youth gone with them. But they were really important, like, after the first wave of punk rock, the development of a network in Canada of underground bands, of alternative bands. They owe a lot to.
No, absolutely. I think with Og Records and with their Came From Canada series as well. Like,
those were awesome.
Yeah, I just don't think Canadian independent music would have been the same without those. But that said, we talked about that demo. Let's play a little bit of it. We're just going to play a brief Station ID, quick PSA, and then we're going to get to some, I'm sure, music you've never heard before from Enemies.